You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Every day, New Yorkers put thousands of tons of trash and recycling bags out on the curb to be picked up by the 9,200 men and women of the Department of Sanitation. Robin Nagel, a professor at NYU and a sanitation worker for the past 6 years, describes these unsung heroes who keep the city clean in her latest book called Picking Up on the Streets and Behind the Trucks with the Sanitation Workers of New York City. Ms. Nagel and some of her fellow sanitation workers join us now. Anna Lee Feliciano, a supervisor in the Bronx 2 garage, and Angelo Bruno, a sanitation worker with 31 years on the job in Greenwich Village. Myron Priester, who served as borough chief of Brooklyn South for 30-plus years, will be with us after the break. Ms. Nagel's book is published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux, and I'm very pleased to welcome her and three of her fellow sanitation workers to our show today. Hello.
Thank you.
Robin, the department cuts away 11,000 tons of garbage each day. And that's only a portion of the garbage, right? Because people get pickups on different days.
Well, yes, that's a portion of the garbage. It's also only household waste. Therefore, it's roughly a third of the city's total.
Businesses have to pay for their own?
Yes, and construction and demolition debris is the other third.
So how does that compare with other large cities in the world?
In the world, I'd have to give you wonky-sounding numbers for places like Rio or Tokyo. But for the United States, it's not unusual. It's not we're not necessarily out of the ballpark in terms of the amount of garbage that we create as New Yorkers.
So Chicago creates a lot of garbage, too.
Americans create a lot of garbage.
Anna Lee, why does the Department of Labor list sanitation worker among the top 10 most dangerous jobs?
Well, just driving the vehicle alone in New York City is dangerous. But we're exposed to a lot of dangerous refuse out there. There's broken glass. We have to deal with pedestrians, with cars behind you that are not, you know, a lot of guys don't want to let us work. You know, they just want to get around us. Basically, we're exposed to toxic fumes. You know, it's a lot of things out there that we're exposed to.
Well, it's interesting that it's one of the 10 most dangerous jobs, and we're also including in that police officers and firemen. So you are in almost as dangerous a work environment as they are.
Absolutely.
Well, I think what we have is that a lot of time it's physical. We're getting cut, broken glasses, a piece of glass that might be sticking out of the compact bag if you get to a large building site.
Have you ever been hurt on the job, Angel?
Quite a bit. I got some scars on my body from it. And most of the times, a couple of stitches. We go to the hospital and get patched up and go. We have our own medical division that we go get ourselves checked out and then come back to work in a couple of days if we can when the stitches come out.
Well, you've been working in the field for a long time, Angelo. Would you say the job attracts certain types of people, or is it a complete mix?
I think we have a very, very good mix now. Maybe years ago was basically the older guys were on the job. We're getting some very educated people on the job now, and I think it's a wonderful thing. The mix is great, and the girls came on the job. It dressed up the job and made a great job out of it.
When did women come on?
1986.
Now, Robin, he was talking about people with good educations. You have pretty good education as an academic. Did you join the department with the intention of doing a study?
I did. I was doing field work in the classic anthropological way of spending time with people and asking questions and trying to learn as much as I could. But the more time I spent doing that kind of research, the more I realized I actually had to be in title, as they say, be on the job to learn what I needed to know.
And was the department supportive?
Well, sure, except that anyone who wants that job has to go through the same steps as anyone else. So they were supportive. A little surprised, I think, also. But they said, you know, good luck. If you make it, you make it. And if you don't, oh well. So you earn the job based on passing the qualifying tests and whatnot.
And you are the only anthropologist in residence for the Department of Sanitation. What does that job entail?
I've asked that it be structured around projects right now. The book was the first. We're also working to organize the archives of the department. It's historically a deeply important part of the city's history, but its archival records are scattered. We are putting together an oral history project. Angelo has already participated in that, and we have a website that has so far 13 voices of sanitation people of all different walks and backgrounds. And then we are putting together the museum, which is going a little more slowly than I'd like, but it will exist someday.
Now, anthropologists are often interested in the garbage of people from the past because you can learn an awful lot. But what can you learn from the garbage of the present? You're not going to open up bags and go through it to find out what people are disposing of.
Sure you could. In fact, there's a beautiful project out of Arizona started in the 1970s by an archaeologist who was classically trained at Harvard. His name was Bill Rathje, and he did contemporary archaeology of contemporary household trash to learn about what was really going on with all kinds of different social and economic indicators that just survey or observation could not teach you.
So could you can you spot what area the trash came from just by what's in the bags?
Often, yes. There was a waste characterization study done by the city in the mid-2000s, and even if you didn't know exactly where that particular bin originated, you could figure it out pretty quickly by looking at the contents.
Now, Anna Lee, women came on into the department in 1986. I keep on wanting to say on the force. I don't know why.
You can.
When did you join?
I joined in August of 2000.
And what kind of tests did you need to pass to become a sanitation worker?
It's a test given to everyone. You have to pass a written test. You must make the list once you pass the written exam. You have to take a physical, and that entails strength, agility, and of course, you know, the blood and all of that. You have to definitely do well in order for them to hire you.
So you have to pick up heavy bags?
Yeah. That How strength heavy test are they? Is actually, they actually time you. You know, they gave you, it's kind of like a mock scenario of you picking up garbage and dragging cans out to the back of a truck and tossing it, and you have to do it in a certain amount of time without collapsing.
Mm-hmm. Was it difficult? I mean, by now, I'm sure you are used to it, although you're not doing that anymore.
I don't do that any longer, but yes, it's a matter of getting used to it. At first, when I did the exam, it was quite a shock. I went home, I was still breathing heavy.
But I assume, Angelo, you had similar experiences.
Well, it's a different job. It's definitely a physical job from the time you step in out of the truck in the morning until the time you go home. It's 100% physical.
Well, what did you wanted to do before you decided to take the test?
Well, like, I was in the service before I came back, and I came back from Vietnam, and there wasn't too much work in the city of New York at that particular time, so I went out and I took all the tests. And we have three generations on the job. My brother was on the job. My nephew's on the job, so... It was always good stories around the house about the sanitation. So when I took it, I tried it, you know, and I liked it.
Well, you went from wearing one kind of uniform to another.
Yes, sir.
What does a sanitation worker's uniform consist of?
Well, I went through a couple of different types of sanitation. When I first got on a job, it was still the color green, but it was a different type. And now I see the guys have night reflective T-shirts on and stuff like that, and I think that's a wonderful thing. Safety is number one on the job.
You also have to wear special gloves?
Well, you wear work gloves, good heavy-duty work gloves. You know, the whole idea of wearing uniform and buying the right equipment, buying the right work shoe has a lot to do with it. You're in those shoes all day long, so the better equipment that you have, the better you'll last on the job.
I'm talking with Angelo Bruno, Anna Lee Feliciano, and Robin Nagel, who is the author of a book called Picking Up on the Streets and Behind the Trucks with the Sanitation Workers of New York City. Robin, you say that sanitation workers feel underappreciated in New York. Do you think more here than elsewhere?
No. I think maintenance work of any kind is generally not seen and not appreciated pretty much universally.
And do you think that that has a psychological impact on sanitation workers?
I think it can. I assumed before I got to know the department that they actually wore that sort of disregard as a heavy burden within the job. But I learned that, in fact, it's more important that your colleagues respect you. What the larger public thinks of you from one day to the next is going to change depending on your route or conditions. But if you are well regarded on the job, that's going to help you like the job better.
Well, Annalie, do friends and relatives say disparaging things at times?
Not often, but they do. I'm because I'm on the job, I get a lot of people calling, and they're wondering when is that truck going to come by to sweep up, you know, their curbside, or when is that truck going to go by to spread some salt, right? We'll get there eventually, but yes, I do get a lot of complaints. You know, we can accommodate everybody. I try to tell everybody we'll get there. You know, we will get there. But not so much. It's not so bad.
Well, we only become aware of what a yeoman's job you do when there is a strike and suddenly
yes,
there's all that garbage collecting on the streets and we realize, boy, do we create a lot of garbage. Robin, you call sanitation workers folk sociologists in the book. What do you mean by that?
Angelo, I know, can speak to this in some detail, but anyone who's been on a route for a period of time can tell you all kinds of details about the economic fortunes of that particular set of blocks, how many families are moving out or in, are there births or deaths, or maybe somebody kicked an alcohol habit, but now you see there's maybe they're back to it. It's not that any sanitation worker cares so much about an individual household that they're going to pry, but you see what goes in the back of the truck and the bags break, and you, the individual householder, are revealed to the people working the street.
Have you been surprised at times, Angelo, by some of the things that people throw out?
Very surprised sometimes. You'll be surprised what you find over the years that you're on the route. The only thing I want to clear up with you is that in my career, being in the village this long and being blessed to be in a great garage, I try to enlighten the people that when they saw the truck coming down that block, it's a garbage truck. It's not a garbage man. I'm a sanitation worker. I'm not part of the garbage. The garbage is in the truck. And I have to say, over the years that I was down there, I think I enlightened some people about that.
What were some of the most outrageous things that you've seen in New York City trash? And what are some of the more expensive ones, the ones that really surprised
you? Well, you'd be very surprised what you find. And a couple of times there's some happy days at the end of the day. A girl lost her wedding band and a wedding ring. And she came running down the block. She says, oh, my God, I had an argument with my boyfriend. He threw it away. And believe it or not, you could determine on the truck by the way you start your route where that hot area would be.
It doesn't get crushed?
It gets pushed up into the hopper and it goes up in the truck. But what happens that particular time, if you get the approval from the city, you'll go to a local garage and you'll dump. They used to call it a string piece years ago of a big cement area. And we would dump the truck on the ground and they would pick rakes and rake through it. And at the end of the day, most of the time, they found what they were looking for. So what a happy ending.
What is Mongo?
Mongo is some stuff that they find on the street.
Are there good places, special places to find them?
I really wasn't into that particular part of it.
Robin? Any affluent neighborhood is going to have good Mongo. Rich people throw out really good stuff.
Well, sometimes you replace, let's say you buy a better printer and you don't know whether you should put a little note on it saying, this works, take it, rather than just simply leaving it for sanitation.
And most of the time, people do put labels on it. It's good for someone else to keep getting recycling around. It's a great thing.
Now, in your case, Annalie, you're a supervisor, so you're the one who, you don't go out with the trucks anymore.
I don't go out with the trucks now. I am in charge of dispatching the equipment and personnel in a timely fashion, make sure that every route gets done completely. And I'm also out there issuing summonses if I have to.
Now, there's a map of the city sanitation districts in the beginning of the book, Robin. Do sanitation workers consider certain places, districts better than others? They try to work their ways up to the better districts?
Better district is going to be defined very personally. Maybe the best district is the one that for you is the shortest commute. Maybe it's the one where you have the best rapport with the people in that garage. You certainly look at the map of the city and you have a place where you'd really love to work, but it's going to be defined differently for different people.
Now, you also describe the South Bronx transfer station. That doesn't sound like a place I would want to work.
I worked in it. I didn't work. That's a privately owned operation, and the people who work for that are going to be in there all day. Yeah, it's definitely a work environment that's a challenging one.
Why?
That's where the trucks from the Bronx are dumped, and so you'll have dozens, if not hundreds, of tons of trash in any one time, and it gets ripe.
And that could happen in any of the transfer stations.
Oh, of course. That's the nature of a transfer station.
Robin Nagel's book is Picking Up on the Streets and Behind the Trucks with the Sanitation Workers of New York City. It's published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. Also with us is Annalie Feliciano. Angelo Bruno, who's going to leave us now?
I did. I retired in 2010.
Uh-huh. And is there anything you want to say before you leave the show? Well, we're going to bring in Myron Priester for our next segment.
I have to say that this job was always very good to me. I have two daughters at home, both graduate with master's degrees, and it was for this job that made my life pretty good coming back from the service.
And since there's a thing called sanitation speak, did your kids get annoyed when you told them about experiences using sanitation speak?
Not at all. Not at all.
Then they learned all those words?
Yes, they did, and they're very proud of their father.
We'll go back to that and other things after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with Robin Nagel, who is an anthropologist. In fact, the anthropologist in residence at New York City's Department of Sanitation since 2006. She's a clinical associate professor of anthropology and urban studies at New York University, where she also directs the John W. Draper Interdisciplinary Master's Program in Humanities and Social Thought. She's written a book called Picking Up on the Streets and Behind the Trucks with the Sanitation Workers of New York City. It's published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. And Annalie Feliciano has remained with us, and we are now joined by Myron Priester, who was the borough chief of Brooklyn South for 30-plus years.
Oh, actually 27.
Okay, well, close enough.
Okay.
So welcome to our show.
Thank you very much.
And what does the borough chief do?
Well, coordinate cleaning and collection activities throughout the entire borough. Snow activities, any kind of function, parades, actually any kind of function that that involves removing garbage or either cleaning up the streets.
Because we've been talking mostly about picking up the garbage from the curb, but the sanitation department has all sorts of other functions. It has the sweepers, and it also the snowplow. Oh, the snowplows, are they really just garbage trucks with plows put in the front?
More or less, yes. That's exactly what they are. And we have different vehicles for different. They're dual purpose vehicles. You know, like they can actually do snow and then go right back to garbage in a matter of minutes.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you have to start off with the trucks and then work your way up?
Yeah, I started off, matter of fact, in this neighborhood. I was working over on Gainesboro Street. Myself and Angelo used to work together. He was my shop steward. So we both come a long way.
There are 9,200 people working in the sanitation department. Do you all know each other?
No, but pretty much most people know each other just through reputation or from going to different boroughs when you have to work out of town. But everybody doesn't know each other, no. But,
now, how much did you, I'm going to ask both of you, because it was a long time ago, what was your starting salary, Annalie?
Wow. Back then, as a sand worker, the starting base salary, I believe, was $58.
Mm-hmm. $58,000 a year? No. Sorry to jump in with this, but I started as a sanitation worker in 2004, it was low 30s.
And I started in 1986, it was 23.
Yeah, uh-huh. So when you started in 90, you came on?
No.
2000, you came on. Starting salary was not $58,000. Couldn't have been.
Well, maybe
she
got
top
a good deal.
Pay. After you'd been on for a few years, but you're starting to, I promise you, if someone told you 58, they were pulling your leg.
No. I could have sworn it was that.
It maybe was after you got to top pay.
Yeah.
If you start at 58 in the year 2000, there is suddenly going to be an awful lot of listeners going to the Department of Sanitation right now and saying, hey, I want to sign up.
Yes. Well, there always are, though. They're at the last
exam. It is considered
exam.
A plum job?
Well, sure, because it's you have security, you have benefits, you have a pension. You bust your hump getting the work done. It's not an easy job, but it's a secure city job. The last test drew something like 75,000 applicants. So there are a whole lot of people who would love to have the job, even though they will not start at $58,000.
Do you need a special driver's license to drive these collection trucks?
Yes, you have to have a commercial driver's license, which the department helps you get. As soon as you pass the test, you go to Floyd Bennett Field. the department will help you secure a license.
And some of the best teachers I've ever worked with are out at Floyd Bennett Field. Amazing instructors.
So that's like driving a one of those huge semis? Is
no. It's a CDL, Commercial Driver's License Class B, which means you are authorized to a certain tonnage, but it's not a semi-tractor trailer. That's a Class A CDL. It's a whole other level of training. The department will train you in that also for certain kinds of specific jobs, but when you first come on, you're trained for your CDL Class B.
How many trucks in the department's fleet?
How many trucks actually?
Mm-hmm. Do you know?
I'll be honest with you, I don't know, but it's... I really don't know.
Like 2,300. That's on the website. And
I imagine some of them break down. Is there a repair shop?
Yes, we have a... CRS is a large repair shop over in Queens. Central Repair Shop, that's over in Queens. That's a large repair shop. And we have we have mechanics in every garage who repair trucks. We also have regional repair shops in each borough.
Now, Robin, you, in writing this book, you looked into the history of the sanitation department. What was the situation like before the department was created?
It was unimaginably filthy. There was a kind of perpetual crud in the streets that was ankle deep or even shin deep, that was so thoroughly part of city life that it was nicknamed Corporation Pudding. It's hard for us to imagine what it was like back then.
And that goes into the late 19th century?
Until 1895, when George Waring was named commissioner of the Department of Street Cleaning after Teddy Roosevelt turned down the job. And he said, I can do it. He brought military structure and hierarchy and accountability, and he started in the worst, most dangerous, dirtiest neighborhoods, because he said, if I can clean those, like Five Points, then I can clean the rest of the city, and he did it.
When they built a courthouse in what used to be the Five Points area, construction on the building was held up for a year or more because anthropologists went in there to check out the garbage.
Oh, certainly. Any kind, especially in lower Manhattan, in this part of the world, any kind of major construction project, I think it's federal law. Archaeologists go in first to make sure that we're not losing really valuable artifacts.
But immigrant areas like Five Points were the ones that actually suffered the worst before 1895, weren't they?
Certainly. Their city services, such as they were poorly organized. They tended to favor wealthy neighborhoods when they were done at all. And certainly overcrowded immigrant neighborhoods like Five Points and Ragpicker's Row and other impoverished corners of the city, it was a really tough place to live.
I'm surprised that no filmmaker who has made a movie about New York before 1895 has picked up on this. That would really be an incredible detail, wouldn't it?
You mean about how filthy the streets were?
Yes.
You know, movies tend to sanitize, no pun intended, the set. There have been movies about Five Points, and it looks kind of like a place hipsters would move into today. You know, it doesn't look like as bad as it was, I'm sure.
How long, I'm going to ask both you, Anna Lee, and you, Myron, how long did it take for you to really get the job? I mean, was there a breaking in period where you were still trying to figure things out?
Maybe 6 months, maybe less. You know, what's good about the job is you have people who are helping you along the way. You know, so when you first come on as in your own probation, the shop stewards, you know, the senior guys will help you, and they'll teach you the job. And not only that, it's like a family. So, you know, as you go there day by day, you get more comfortable, you know, and you feel warm. You're more part of the family every day, so it didn't take long.
Did you make some really embarrassing mistakes in the early days?
I made more mistakes when I was promoted, but in the early days, no, not really embarrassed mistakes, but not really, because usually, like I said, you had guys helping you. Like I said, Angelo Bruno, who just was here before, he was my shop steward, so he would tell you what you had to do, what neighborhood you were working in, how you work in that neighborhood, and everything else. So.
But, Robin, you reveal in the book many people told you never trust a senior man.
Well, there was one night where a senior man told me never trust a senior man, which was his way of saying he was about to mess up the whole evening for reasons I never really learned. On the job, and this is true also in the other uniformed services in New York, when you come on, if you're lucky, you'll have a rabbi, meaning somebody who takes an interest in your well-being and looks out for you and, as Myron said, teaches you the ropes. And I certainly encountered that. And, of course, in any workforce, there are going to be some sort of bad apples. And I met a couple of those, too, but they do not represent the workforce as a whole.
Annalie, did people give you trouble because you're a woman joining the force?
It was a matter of getting used to, yes. Again, it's a male-oriented job. As a woman, you have to show, basically you have to prove that you can roll with the other men on the job. So at the beginning, they don't want to work with the women. Oh, do I have to work with her today? You know, because until they get to know you, you're out there, you have to do 300% simply because you're a woman. You want to show these guys, I'm one of you.
What happens, Myron, when something really awful hits the city, like Hurricane Sandy?
We mobilize faster than I think we really step up when we have things like that. You know, there's a mentality that we have that we really just go full force.
Well, part of the area that you covered was seriously hit.
Yes.
So you get together and you come up with a battle plan?
Well, more or less it's something like that. We call operations downtown. They'll give us the resources that we need. And we draw up a grid, I guess you could say in terms, of how we're going to attack it. And we just, more or less like in a military sense, we just go out and attack it.
On the other hand, there are some predictable ones. There's a chapter in the book, Robin, that describes in detail how the sanitation department manages to clean up the enormous amount of trash that covers the streets around Times Square after New Year's Eve.
Yes. Yeah. And that, as Myron said, that's also basically a military approach. You have a certain amount of personnel and equipment, and one team starts from the south and one from the north. And you know pretty much from many years of doing it how long it's going to take and what kind of challenges you might encounter and how to do it well.
Annalie, do people call, people from all over the city called in for things like New Year's Eve?
Sorry?
Do you sometimes have to move to another area for something like New Year's Eve?
Absolutely,
or if there's another
yes.
kind of
Everyone
crisis?
Is,
did everybody go to Red Hook after Hurricane Sandy?
Wherever you're required, wherever you're asked to go, mm-hmm. that's where you're sent and that's where you go work.
Robin, can you describe getting lost in an area of the Bronx known as the House of Pain?
The House of Pain, Bronx 7, so nicknamed because they, for a while, had the heaviest weight tally of any garage in the whole city, and it was standard to do a 20-ton day. Getting lost...
Why?
Why? Because it's the population density of that part of the city is almost as high as any... It's almost the highest in New York, and so there's more trash. You have more people, you have more trash. And... In fact, the House of Pain, even for a while, had the 100-ton club when you would do a 5-day work week with 20 tons or more per day. You were a member of the 100-ton club.
Sounds like you don't have to go to the gym after you work.
You don't have to go to the gym. I know workers who use it as a workout who will run the route. Literally, they run between stops and they lift the heaviest bags by themselves so that they are using their job as a way of staying very fit.
You teach an anthropology class at NYU called Garbage in Gotham, the Anthropology of Trash?
Yes.
Is that a popular course?
Some years it is, yes. perhaps with the book out, it'll be more popular now. The basic premise of the class is that you can learn so much about a contemporary civilization, an ancient civilization, individuals, us as a cultural entity by looking at all kinds of issues related to garbage.
Have any of you seen the fabulous exhibit at the Brooklyn Museum of the work of El Anatsui? He is a contemporary African artist who makes huge curtain-like tapestries out of garbage.
No, I'm not familiar with it, no.
There's so many wonderful garbage art works out in the world.
Well, he's considered one of the world's greatest artists, and the exhibit has been extended because it's been so popular, but it's going to be over soon. If you want to see what can be done with the things that you've been working with, things that are so gorgeous, well, maybe you should try to go to the Brooklyn Museum in the next few days.
Let me jump in with another art-related plug here, which mm-hmm. is for Meryl Latterman-Ukeles, who is the Department of Sanitation's artist in residence. She has been since the late 70s. Like my title, we're both unsalaried. That should be on the record. But Meryl has done remarkable art across decades now that has gotten worldwide attention for her particular perspective on the work of sanitation.
Thank you all so much for being on our show. Robin Nagel is a professor at NYU and has also been in the sanitation department for the past 6 years. Her book, Picking Up on the Streets and Behind the Trucks with the Sanitation Workers of New York City, is published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. Anna Lee Feliciano is a supervisor in the Bronx 2 garage. Angela Bruno, who was here for our first part of this discussion, had 31 or how many years?
He had 31 years.
That was in Greenwich Village. He's retired. And Myron Priester, who served as the borough chief of Brooklyn South for 27 years.
Well, not the whole not in Brooklyn South for the whole 27, but I served on the Indian Department for 27 years.
And now
I was the borough chief
in the
two
process
years.
Of retiring?
Yes.
What are you going to do now with all your time?
Well, so
you're
far.
You're not going to be able to get up at 4. How early
I
did
still
you get
up
in the morning?
It's supposed to have it. But I'm doing some work around the house. I'm spending time with my daughter and spending time with my mother, too. She's getting a little old.
And I'll bet you all separate your trash a lot more efficiently than the rest of us do.
Absolutely.
Because you know.
But
it's my
now
job.
You will, too.
Thank you all so much for being on our show.
Thank you.
Thank you.